Okay, I think I had the mute button on, so I apologize for that. Welcome to our show for tonight on Bamper Racing Radio. We're doing our Watkins Glen and Evergreen NASCAR weekend preview with Hot Topic Sound Off at 10 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. Joining me for tonight's show is our co-host for tonight, and that is Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Well, thanks for having me, and I'm certainly pleased to be on tonight, Watkins Glen and Road Course Racing, one of my favorite weekends personally, so excited to be here for this one as we talk road course racing tonight.
Yes, indeed. We've got a lot of racing to talk about here tonight. We're going to start with some short track news and some of their upcoming races this weekend. Well, we've got three races to review in the ARCA series, starting with the ARCA Menards series at Watkins Glen International on Friday. Then the ARCA West will race at Evergreen Speedway on Saturday. And on Sunday, the ARCA Menards series will be back in action at the Illinois State Fairgrounds Speedway, which is a dirt track. So we've got everything covered this weekend with the racing that's going on. At 9 o'clock, we have some audio from Scott Cipadelli. He's the Vice President of Competition at Stuart Haas Racing. And afterward, Andy and I have to go through all the list of names here. Andy and I will give our comments about the his audio comments. And then afterward, we'll offer some updates from the NASCAR Truck Series. They are not racing this weekend, so we'll just kind of give you the latest and greatest there. At 9:30, we're going to get into the preview of the NASCAR Xfinity Series and the NASCAR Cup Series, both racing at Watkins Glen International. So, Andy, I guess we'll start with some short track racing news. There's so much going on, and still more racing left for the limited late models and street stocks at North Wilkesboro Speedway. Not this weekend, but in a couple weekends, August 30th and 31st. So still a lot to look forward to there at North Wilkesboro Speedway.
Yeah, there is. You know, that's certainly going to be a good one. For one thing, first and foremost, just really excited to see racing back at North Wilkesboro after all these years. That's going to be a good one for the late models. And then taking a look here, some kind of unfortunate news. The August 20th race canceled at Goodyear All-American Speedway. Unfortunate events there. Take a look at the reasons why. Unfortunately, due to staffing shortages and a family emergency. For anybody that was planning on going to that one, that's not going to happen, unfortunately. Also taking a look here. Let's see.
There's 70 entries filed for the 49th Oxford 250, so that's going to be exciting. That's always a big event every year.
Yeah, in fact, that's just right up the road from me, and I regret to say that I've never been to that, which is unfortunate. It's in my home state, but one of these years I'll have to. It's one of the bigger short track racing events in the United States, so hopefully I have to get to that at some point.
Yep, that's at Oxford Plains Speedway. They're racing August 26th to the 28th. So, again, that's an upcoming event, but 70 people on that list already, so it's going to be pretty big. Okay. Okay, the first dirt race highlights for a wild week in the Penske Series. A three-team championship battle in that series going on. That's one of our NASCAR affiliates here. Andy, are you still with me?
Yeah, and just taking a look here at some of the other racing news. The State Line Champions seek the NWX LMS Liberty Launch Academy 125 victory, and those are the Northwest Super Late Models as they prepare for their first race since June 18th. So a bit of a break for them. It'll be nice to see them back on track here in almost 2 months.
Yes, indeed. They're ready to go back racing for sure. Let's take a look at Flow Racing and see what's going on there, because they will have a lot of the coverage from this weekend of racing. There's a NASCAR Roots Notebook. Championship battles heating up all over, so if you want to catch up with everything that's going on from a NASCAR Roots point of view, they get into the Whelen Modified Tour, the Penske Series, and the Arca Menard Series, and all the different NASCAR races that are happening under this banner. With the Penske Series racing on dirt and everything else. So a good one to kind of catch up on everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the Whelen Modified Series. Of course, they're going to be at the Thompson Speedway in Connecticut. That race was moved due to rain until today, actually, Thursday, August 18th. And some familiar faces in that one, most notably Ryan Preece, was a late-minute addition subbing for Bobby Santos III. So be curious to see how they all do in this one. The Modifieds always put on exciting racing action every time they hit the racetrack.
No doubt about that. They really do a nice job. So there's a lot to look forward to with racing. Jay and I talk about this all the time. And Andy, I don't know if you're a subscriber to Flow Racing or Racing America, but if you're looking for a race to watch any day of the week, there is racing action to be had at Flow Racing or Racing America. And now there's a kind of a merging of MAV TV with Flow Racing, and a lot of the MAV TV events you can see at Flow Racing now too.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You bring up a good point. They have 24/7 racing coverage, and I think, you know, for racing fans, you know, years ago we used to have the Speed Channel, and when that went away, we kind of lost that for a while. But Flow Racing and MAV TV have not only brought us racing every day of the week, but they have opened up the ability to see all the local short track action across the country, and I think that really has helped broaden the horizons and brought awareness to those events maybe that some of us were never aware of. So it's fun that we have this at our disposal to enjoy racing 7 days a week.
And that is so true. And, you know, the weekly touring series, the Advanced Auto Parts weekly touring series, so many of those races happen all over the country, and so many of them are covered over at Flow Racing as well. So races that we maybe not had access before, we have access to seeing those races now right at your local short track. If you're not able to go to the short track, you can still see it on the live streaming. But by all means, if you're near a racetrack, get out there to the racetrack.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Okay. Anyway, they have a schedule here at Flow Racing as well of all the racing that's coming up at that they have coming up as far as their streaming service. And there is a lot of racing action going on this weekend. I'm trying to get to, somehow I skipped over August.
Yeah, I got it up here, Sharon. I can take a run through that. Of course, the 2022 Lincoln Tech Open Modified 80, that's the race I alluded to. Actually, no, that is a different modified event. I stand corrected. There's two modified events this weekend, the Whelen Modified Tour at Thompson. The Open Modified race, that's at Stafford Motor Speedway. That's tomorrow night at 5:50 p.m. I've been there for two modified races. They put on a great show. If anyone's up in New England, get out to that one. That'll be a fun one. The Butterball Woodridge Memorial, it will be at Richmond Raceway. That's also tomorrow night. The 2022 Canadian Big Block Modified Series at Autodrome Granby tomorrow night. Just a lot going on. The Outlaw Speedway will host the Tezos All-Star Circuit of Champions. The Mars Late Models at Kankakee County Speedway tomorrow night. Weekly racing at Marshalltown Speedway. There's just a lot going on here. The list goes on. That's just a few examples
huge,
of what
it?
We'll see. Yeah, absolutely. That's just a few examples of what's going on. The Lucas Oil Topless 100 at Batesville Motor Speedway tomorrow. The USAC Silver Crown, that'll be a good one. That's tomorrow night, 9 p.m. at the Worldwide Technology Raceway. just to name a few, but certainly a robust amount of racing for Friday night tomorrow.
Absolutely. And then, you know, there's all the races that are taking place on Saturday as well. There is a lot. So the Idaho 208 at Meridian Speedway on August 19th and 20th, the Johnny Key Classic at Ocean Speedway, the Lucas Oil Pro Motocross Championship at Buds Creek MX Park, the Bettenhaus 100 at Illinois State Fairgrounds. I believe that's a USAC race. So that's in conjunction with the fact that the ARCA Menards Series will be there that same weekend. So a lot going on at the Illinois State Fairgrounds this weekend. Also the weekly racing at Riverhead Raceway. Virginia Motor Speedway will have the prelude to the Fast Track World Championship available. And at Oswego Speedway, there's the Track Championship Night. More weekly racing at Bridgeport Motorsports Park on Saturday, the Hall of Fame Night at Atomic Speedway, the Tezos All-Star Circuit of Champions at Utica Rome Speedway, and more weekly racing at Berlin Raceway, as well as Jennerstown Speedway, and the list goes on and on. It's amazing how much racing they have here.
Yeah, if you were to tell me you couldn't find anything to watch this weekend, I would say you haven't looked hard enough. So much going on, and it really does promise to be a good one this weekend.
It does indeed. Now, some of the races that we're going to pay particularly close attention to are under the ARCA Menards Series, and they are racing on Friday, first of all, at Watkins Glen. The General Tire Delivers 100 will take place at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That will be televised on Fox Sports 1, as well as radio coverage available at MRN and SiriusXM, channel 391, and online at 981. But ARCA Racing always has radio coverage available there as well. It's an 11-turn, 2.45-mile road course. They will have practice Friday, August the 11th. They'll have practice from 3:15 to 4:15, qualifying from 4:25 to 4:45, and the race itself should start sometime around 6:13 p.m. There's definitely a lot of people to watch for in this race.
Yeah, it'll be a good one for sure. Let's take a look and see if we can find the entry list here, because this should be a pretty good one. And, of course, they're also working toward their championship here. So certainly a lot of points implications on the line with this one.
Sanchez is ahead of Rajah Caruth, who's led most of the season this year. And he is Sanchez kind of passed him up this past week. Or a couple weeks ago, and so it's going to be interesting to see if he can hold on to that points lead. We usually go bottom up, Andy, and just kind of give a rundown of who's on the entry list.
Yeah, sure. Got the entry list right here in front of me. Rita Thompson, Casey Garden, these are names I'm not familiar with, but there is a name we all are familiar with in Brandon Jones. He's driving a Joe Gibbs entry. Of course, he'll be a factor. Andy Jankowiak, Christopher Worth, Connor Jones, Brad Smith, all on the entry list here. Daniel Dye, Greg Van Alst, these are names that are very familiar to the ARCA Menards Series. Austin Wayne Self, of course, a Truck Series competitor coming over. Amber Valkleen, Tony Braninger, Connor Mostak, Jesse Love, Sammy Smith, of course, and the first half of the entry list. So some familiar names, some newcomers to the series. Should be a good one. Looks like there's quite a few cars, Sharon, that are entered for this road course event on Friday night.
Absolutely. Jesse Love, Sammy Smith, Taylor Gray, all unable to race at some of the bigger tracks because of their age, are now back on track this weekend. So that's going to be fun to see. Parker Chase, Ed Pompa, Stanton Barrett, Tim Monroe, Dr. Ed Bull, Raja Karuth, Dale Quarterly, and Nick Sanchez all on that entry list for this weekend. And, of course, it's going to be a lot of racing action on the road course at Watkins Glen. So I'm glad to see that some of these guys can make it back. In fact, the battle for the championship took a big turn in the most recent race at Michigan International Speedway when Nick Sanchez moved to the top of the standings following his victory in the Henry Ford 200. So even though Nick Sanchez is holding the lead over his Reb Racing teammate Raja Karuth by just 7 points, there's Daniel Dye also knocking on the door. He's just 9 points behind Sanchez. So those are the three drivers to really keep your eye on this weekend. And, of course, there's going to be, I think, Andy, some that are going to be spoilers in this race.
There are indeed. As I alluded to just a few moments ago, NASCAR Xfinity Series driver Brandon Jones will come over from Joe Gibbs Racing and make his fourth start of the season for JGR. In his three previous starts this season, he has victories at Charlotte and Iowa Speedway. So indeed, Sharon, he will be a spoiler, no doubt, this weekend. And also Austin Wayne Self coming over from the Truck Series. That'll be a fun one. He is a veteran of 50 starts in the ARCA series, owning one victory, and is entered to drive the number 32 for team owner Kevin Sawinski. So certainly some pretty big names, if you will, from other disciplines in NASCAR that are coming over to get some road course experience tomorrow night at the Glen. So should make it fun, as these drivers will mix it up with the regulars tomorrow night.
There's also some road course experts that are among the field. They include Parker Chase, who finished second earlier this year at Mid-Ohio for Venturini Motorsports. And other road course experts on the list include Dale Quarterly, and you recognize this name, Andy. Stanton Barrett is going to be on the entry list as well. So, again, I mentioned earlier that some of the drivers that were not at Michigan are back on the track. Taylor Gray, Jesse Love are both returning. Connor Jones is back with Venturini Motorsports. And Sammy Smith is going to be looking for his third victory of the season, driving for Kyle Busch Motorsports.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Christopher Worth, who made his ARCA Series debut at Watkins Glen last year, is back for a second career start. Also entered are South Africa's Arnaud Kok, Dr. Ed Bull, and Casey Carden. I don't remember seeing Armand on the entry list there, but maybe he was a TBD.
Yeah, it could be. It could be a late addition, possibly, to the field.
Okay, we are now going to move over to the ARCA Menards Series West. They are going to reach a milestone this weekend, their 1,000th race milestone on Saturday at Evergreen Speedway. So it's going to be a night of historical significance for the ARCA Menards Series West, the division celebrating that 1,000th race in the Napa Auto Parts ARCA West 150. So that's going to be a big deal for these guys. Go ahead.
It'll be a fun one for sure. But, yeah, it'll be the Napa Auto Parts ARCA West 150 at the Evergreen Speedway, as you spoke about, on Saturday, August 20th. That will be 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. At 9:30 p.m. Eastern. It will be on USA if you want to see it on Friday, August 26th at 2 p.m. So for those who want to see it on TV, you'll have to wait a week, but nonetheless, they will broadcast it on USA or Flow Racing. It'll be broadcast live on Saturday night. Radio will be arcaracing.com, and a little history about the track. It is a 5/8-mile paved oval for 150 laps. Should be a good one. Evergreen has always been a track to put on a good show for the ARCA Menards Series.
Yes, indeed. Now, they'll have practice on Saturday from 2:30 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and the race starting again at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. That's 9:30 p.m. Eastern. So definitely a lot to look forward to here. Evergreen has hosted more events for the West Series than any other track with 59. Dick Brown took home a victory in the first race at Evergreen back in 64, while the current Camping World Truck Series competitor Blaine Perkins won the most recent race in the facility in 2020. While the past will be honored during pre-race ceremonies, the current generation of West Series drivers are looking to make their own stamp on history by battling it out with each other for that opportunity to win that 1,000th race. So who are the drivers to watch this weekend?
Well, it should be a good one. Let's take a look at the entry list here. I'm just going to pull that up momentarily. Taking a look down at the bottom, if I can get my computer to behave itself here.
Well, I'll go ahead and get it started. They have Dave Smith, Cole Moore, Bridget Burgess, Joey East, Trevor Huddleston. Andrew Tuttle is going to be there. The 21 is to be determined, so that hasn't been announced yet. Landon Lewis, Todd Souza is going to be there. Are you there yet, Andy?
Yeah, Todd Souza, Kyle Keller, Chris Loudon going to be involved, and then you've got Tanner Reese, Takuma Koga, Jake Drew, and Sean Hingirani in the number four car. So several entries there, of course, and should be a fun one, no doubt.
Okay. Now, in the last 2 months, the West Series competition, no other driver has been as dominant as Jake Drew. After failing to win a race during his rookie season, Drew has now won at least three West Series events, including Portland International, Sonoma Raceway, and Irwindale. So he's had a lot of efficiency that's allowed him to build a comfortable 45-point advantage over Cole Moore in the point standings. So it's going to be interesting. As with most drivers entered this weekend, Drew enters the race with little to no experience, however, at Evergreen. But there is Takuma Koga. He leads the fields with the most starts at Evergreen, having raced there seven times before between 2002 and 2020. His best finish of ninth was in his most recent appearance. And then there's a bunch of other people that we've mentioned that will also be at the track. So we'll see if Jake Drew can keep his momentum going this weekend.
Yeah, and what's something we've alluded to as well is it is going to be of historical significance for the ARCA Menards West Series. It's the division's 1,000th race with the running of this event this weekend. It began all the way back in 1954 when Dick Raffman won the inaugural race at Oakland Stadium. Many talented drivers have come through the West Series since that day, some of the most notable names including Jack McCoy, Ray Elder, Herschel McGriff, Jimmy Insulo, and many more. Evergreen has hosted more events for the West Series than any other tracks, with 59. Dick Brown took home a victory in the inaugural West Series event at Evergreen, which was back in 1964. Current Camping World Truck Series competitor Blaine Perkins won the most recent race back in 2020, something I think you may have already mentioned. But nonetheless, this is going to be a good one. Hard to believe it's the 1,000th race for the series.
That's pretty exciting. Okay, but the ARCA Menards Series is actually doing double duty this weekend. In addition to their race at Watkins Glen on Friday night, they'll be making the trip to Illinois State Fairgrounds for the Atlas 100 on Sunday, August the 21st. That race will take place at 1 p.m. Central, that's 2 p.m. Eastern, and will be available on MAV TV and Flow Racing for streaming. Also, they'll have radio coverage over at ArcaRacing.com. It's a one-mile clay oval. They'll be racing 100 laps for 100 miles. Friday they'll have a practice from 10 to 10:30 Central Time, qualifying from 11:15 a.m. and the race at 1 p.m. That race is actually on Sunday, so I don't know why they have Friday here. But let's take a look at the entry list for this one.
Absolutely, and I think this is going to be a challenge for the Arca Menards teams, running not only a doubleheader weekend, but on two very distinctive types of racetracks. Nonetheless, Zachary Tinkle, Alex Klubb, Dallas Frua, Will Kilmel, Brad Smith, Buck Stevens, amongst the first few entries here. Daniel Dye, Greg Van Alst, Amber Balfleen, Tony Bredinger, Ryan Unzicker, Jesse Loves.
He's
Sammy
a local
Smith,
favorite.
Gray. Ah, very good to know. I didn't know that. That's going to be interesting. And certainly when you have that kind of experience, I'm sure he'll be a factor. And then we bring up through Jesse Love and Sammy Smith. That's the first half of the field. A lot of the same names that are going to be running on Friday at Watkins Glen. So certainly a busy weekend, Sharon.
Absolutely. In addition to those drivers, there's Taylor Gray. Kelly Koski is another local favorite that we will be racing this weekend at Illinois State Fairgrounds. Buddy Colfoyd, we've seen him be on track in this series a few times. Brian Hogeberg, Kenny Schrader from Fenton, Missouri. It's going to be great to see him on track at Illinois State Fairgrounds. Tim Monroe, Roger Carruth, and your series points leader, Nick Sanchez. So, again, this is going to be a fun race to watch with a lot of action taking place here. So this is where they're going to play on dirt.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool, no doubt about it. Let's see here. It's once again going to be true this year as far as the dirt goes, as a trio of drivers known for their exploits on dirt are set to join the Arca Menards series for this Atlas 100 at Illinois State Fairgrounds. Led by TRD development driver Buddy Colfoyd, who will make his Arca Menards series debut driving the number 15 Toyota for Venturini Motorsports. He is the defending USAC National Midget Series champion, and he already made his Camping World Truck Series debut earlier this year at the Bristol Dirt event, as well as Knoxville Raceway for Kyle Busch Motorsports. So certainly already has experience in stock trucks on dirt, which will be comparable to the Arca Menards cars. Good experience for him. Another dirt expert set to compete in Sunday's race is dirt late model star Ryan Unzicker, who is a winner in ARCA competition at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. His victory was a couple years ago in 2020 on a day that saw the driver from El Paso, Illinois, start from the pole, and he led all but one lap, which is pretty impressive, in his only ARCA Menards Series victory to date. He will be back in the number 24 owned by Bill Hendren. So that's going to be fun. And, of course, Kenny Schrader, I've never heard of him. I don't know who he is. But, Kenny Schrader is going to be making his return to the Arca Menards Series. Fun to see him still racing after all these years.
Yes.
It'll be his first start of the season. He has 18 victories in addition to four in the Cup Series. And, of course, spends a lot of his free time these days dirt track racing around the U.S. and Canada. He does have a victory at Springfield, Illinois dirt track back in 1998, and he'll be teaming up with Andy Hillenburg. So fun to see him in this one. He loves dirt track racing. And I'm sure he'll be a factor in this one on Sunday.
Absolutely. We already mentioned some of the drivers that are going to be joining them, so I won't go over that again. And we're already at the top of the hour. We made it, Andy. We had three previews done in a matter of 15 minutes. So good job there.
Not too bad.
Not too bad at all. Okay, next up we do have some audio here. Earlier this week, Scott Cipadelli called in on a Zoom call with the NASCAR media, and they asked him a few questions here about Stuart Haas Racing. It's Greg Cipadelli. Oh, my gosh, I'm just noticing that. I'm so used to Scott Cipadelli, Andy. Greg Cipadelli is the chief competition officer And what some of the questions they're asking him is the chances of winning three straight wins this weekend at Watkins Glen. We know Kevin Harvick won back-to-back the last two races. They're wondering if he can make it three in a row. With the two wins, do you feel like you've made some gains, or would you argue that you weren't the fastest car the last 2 weeks? Do you feel like you're maybe a little bit behind? We'll see what he answers there. Is the 10-car situation unsettling or typical of where we are in August? And I don't know if we'll get this far, but do you know what caused the fire in Chase's car? Was it the same thing as what happened to Logano and Buescher 2 weeks ago? If we don't get to that question, I do have the answer here, and we'll cover that on the other side. But let's listen to what Greg Zipadelli has to say here.
All right, joining us this afternoon is the Chief Competition Officer for Stewart Haas Racing, Greg Zipadelli. Nice sounding title, Greg. You've had that for a couple weeks. How's it feeling? Pretty good?
Yeah, two wins with it, so you know, you can't complain.
We've got questions here from our group. If you've got a question for Greg, feel free to raise your hand. We head to Watkins Glen this week where Kevin Harvick has won two in a row. Greg, I'll just start off. Jim Utter couldn't make the call, but he did have a question. The fact that two wins in a row for Kevin and the resurgence of your other teams as well, just kind of your thoughts on potential of maybe winning three in a row this week with Kevin and Stewart Haas.
Oh, well, I mean, we go every week to win with all four of our teams, performing to the highest level. So that's always the goal. The four car has done a really good job in the last. Honestly, you got to go back to Nashville, Sonoma, Pocono. I think it gets overlooked how good they ran at some of those racetracks. They didn't have an opportunity to win or lead a bunch of laps, but they had speed. And, it kind of started then. So, and then the last 2 weeks, they've done a great job executing. Things have gone their way. They've cars have unloaded with a little bit more raw speed, and, it's allowed them to have an opportunity to win, and they've been able to capitalize on that.
All right, let's kick off the question and answer portion here with Bob Pockris. Go ahead, Bob, kick us off.
Yes, Zippy, there was a lot kind of made or thought that things were, that you guys didn't have the speed or just you were stick behind everybody else. I'm curious, with the two wins, do you feel like you guys have made the gains, or do you still, some would argue that you maybe still didn't have the best car either week. Do you still feel like you're a little bit behind?
I think that we made gains, but I don't think by any means that you can sit and say that you can stop working. I'd say that Kevin, had a really good car last week. I mean, he drove around the car for the lead and never looked back. So, I mean, you can say what you want, but you know what I mean? There's always room for improvement. I think what I looked at last week was all four cars were fast. I honestly, if things went well and Cole didn't have his issue and Chase didn't have his fire, I feel like we had potential to have four cars in the top 10, top 12 pretty easily. So to me, that's something that as a group we've struggled with, is we've unloaded here every week and had at least one, if not two cars qualify in the top 10, top 12 and run there, but we haven't been able to have all four cars and have that kind of speed and execution. So from that perspective, I think shows that we are going. All the work we have been doing is going in the right direction. But like I said, it's a time of year where everybody's working just as hard as you are. So you got to continue to push and build as much speed in these cars as you can on a weekly basis.
And it's obviously still no decision yet on who drives the 10 next year. I assume that, a lot of talk about will Eric come back full time, will he not? Is that unsettling, or is that, typical, if you're in racing, you're always going to August and not likely know, what your total lineup's going to be next year?
Yeah, no, that's not to me, it's not a big deal. We waited a lot longer to make some of those decisions and try to build around. So, I think we'll be fine there. We've got a couple good options, and just kind of waiting to see how everything plays out.
I just want to ask one more. You talked about the fire. Do you know what caused it? And was it, I think NASCAR is saying that they don't think it was the exact same thing as what happened with Buescher and Logano 2 weeks ago.
No, it doesn't appear to be exactly what, why that insulation in the rocker box caught fire. We're kind of looking into it. There wasn't damage to it, so that's kind of the surprising thing. I don't know. Rubber got up in there and started the fire and burned. It's so hard to tell because so much of it was, had burned for a while. So pretty disappointing. Chase and Johnny and the whole group had done a really good job of adjusting on their car and keeping him in the game all day, and that's what they needed. Come up short again was a little disappointing.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Bob. Let's go to Jordan Bianchi. Go ahead, Jordan.
Hey, Greg, appreciate the time. What has it been like for Kevin and Rodney over the last 2 years? Kevin's kind of said they've kind of been even keel about this and stayed the course, so to speak. But I'm wondering from your perspective, a little bit more removed from their day-to-day interactions, what it's been like.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job handling it and not letting it tear them up and making a bigger deal out of it. They just go on every week and race as hard as they could and try to put themselves in position. And I've been in some of those situations before where it's like you feel like you're doing everything you have been doing and you're working just as hard and you're just not getting the results. So you're just not having the speed. As a whole, I would say us as a group, the Fords as a group, have been off a little bit this year. So we're working hard and along with all the other teams and to peak at the right time.
Okay, Andy, your thoughts about Greg Zipadelli's comments?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously they've been off this year, like he mentioned, and so interesting that the four car has won the last two races, but I do think they were bound to at some point. They're just too good not to. I think what's interesting is I don't know if he mentioned it or not in this one, talking about Cole Custer returning to the 41 for next year. It sounds like that is their plan, actually, for that to continue. There had been some rumors about what the future of that team's like, so it sounds like they're trying to figure out the 10 car right now, and it'll be interesting to see where they go with that. Supposedly, Eric Almirola may or may not return, so that 10 car is still a bit of a big mystery as far as what the future holds for that car and possibly even the 41 car. So it'll be curious to see what happens. It sounds like there's still a lot to be determined.
Yes, indeed. But he does kind of confirm, right, that Cole Custer will be back at SHR for 2023. That's the plan at this moment anyway. So their focus really, I think, is on the 10 car and finding somebody to be in that car for the next season. I thought it was interesting. I felt like it was a little awkward almost when he asked him about whether or not they've made any gains or is their work, are they a little bit behind. And I think that Greg Zipadelli acknowledges, of course, that they've struggled this season. But I think they have made some gains with Kevin Harvick getting the last two wins in the Cup Series, don't you think, Candy?
Yeah, I would say they're doing something right, that's for sure. So, in what has been a bit of a tough year, they're heading in the right direction.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and move on here. I know we're ahead of schedule, Andy, but I think we're going to need it when we get to the Cup Series. I'm going to go ahead and we'll go and discuss some updates here for the for the truck series because they are not racing this weekend. The NASCAR Camping World Truck Series next race will take place next week, the Kansas Lottery 200, on Friday, September the 9th at 7:30. We'll give you more details on that next Thursday when we preview the Kansas races. But we'll give you a few updates here just so that you can kind of stay on top of what's happening in the truck series. Do you want to start with the rebound of Josvar and Ekkes? They're kind of on the outside looking in at this moment.
Yeah, maybe you better go. I'm trying to get that pulled up if you want to go ahead and start.
No, okay, that's fine. Nice Motorsports, Carson Josvar is down by 3 points. Thor Sport Racing's Christian Ekkes is down by 6. They're the two drivers right now that are below the playoff round of 8 cut line, and there's just one more race. That's this race at Kansas Speedway next week to figure out who's in and who's not. Two drivers will be eliminated when that race is over. Josvar's playoff started with a 21st place finish at Indianapolis, followed by a 10th place finish at Richmond. And now the Michigan native finds himself 3 points back behind Crafton, who sits in that 8th and final transfer spot. This is Josvar's second playoff appearance, and he hopes to better what he did in 2021, where he was eliminated in that round of 8. Ekkes kicked off his playoffs with that 16th place finish at Indianapolis. He finished 8th at Richmond. That leaves him 6 points back from his Thor Sport Racing teammate, Matt Crafton. Again, he sits in 8th. Ekkes is looking to build on his only other playoff appearance that took place in 2020, but in that appearance, he was eliminated in the round of 10. So we'll see what happens this weekend. There's some clinch scenarios here. Are you comfortable going through that, Andy?
Well, I'm actually trying to figure out where we are so I can get that pulled up.
Oh, it's in the news and notes. Let's see. If you've got J-Skis, they've got the news and notes there. They've got the Cup Series. You can find it there or any of the other series.
And that's probably what I was...
the bottom up.
Gotcha. All right, 1 second.
Okay. Grant Infinger, we know, has clinched his spot. He won at Indianapolis. We know Chandler Smith has clinched his spot. So those are two drivers that have punched their ticket. Chandler won at Richmond. So there's 6 more spots to be determined, right?
Yeah, and, you know, obviously they've got 3 weeks off until they go racing again at Kansas. They got some time off, certainly, so... plenty of time for the teams that need to get themselves locked in to try to prepare to go win that race at Kansas.
Yes, indeed. Now, if there's a repeat winner or a win by a driver that cannot advance to the next round, the drivers I'm going to mention here next can clinch by being ahead of the 7th winless driver in the standings. The same point requirement listed below would hold true if one new winner comes from among Zane Smith, John Hunter Nemechek, Ty Majeski, Stuart Friesen, Ben Rhodes, or Matt Crafton. Those are the other 6 drivers that haven't already punched their ticket. So Zane Smith just needs 10 points. John Hunter Nemechek can clinch with 13 points. Ty Majeski with 20. Stuart Friesen with 25. Ben Rhodes can clinch with 34 points, but if Crafton wins, he's going to need 35 points. Crafton needs 53 points. Carson Josvar needs 55 points, but he needs some additional help if Crafton wins, and Ekkes can only clinch with help. So help meaning a win. He really
right.
needs a win to get in.
And there's no better way to get to the next round than by winning a race. So
absolutely.
It certainly could happen.
Now, if there's a winner from Carson Hocevar or Christian Eckes, these drivers can clinch by being ahead of the sixth Winler drivers in the standings. Zane Smith would need 13 points, John Hunter 16, Ty Majeski 23, Friesen 28, Ben Rhodes 38. Crafton, Hocevar, and Eckes all need that win to get in. And any of these drivers, if they get the win, they're into that next round of eight. So we'll see what happens there. But Chris Wright is making a move. It was announced that he was leaving Nice Motorsports, or was it Young's? But now he's going to be going to Brandonbilt Motorsports, driving the number 68 for that organization for 9 races this season. So that's pretty cool. It starts this weekend at Watkins Glen.
Yeah, it does, and that's an interesting move. Certainly the 68 car has been pretty good in recent times with Brandon Brown behind the wheel. Unfortunate situation that saw him step out of that car. However, a good opportunity for Chris Wright as he makes his return to the Xfinity Series. Other races that you'll see him in that car include Darlington, Kansas, Bristol, the Charlotte Roval, Las Vegas, Homestead, Martinsville, and Phoenix. So that is a good portion of the remainder of the schedule, and this is a quote from him in which he says, "I am extremely grateful for the opportunity to be back in the NASCAR Xfinity Series garage and surrounded by a great team, Brandonbilt Motorsports," Wright said. "The team has been super helpful in trying to acclimate me into the number 68 Chevrolet Camaro for the majority of the remainder of the 2022 season. Looking forward to seeing the fans at Watkins Glen." So certainly a good opportunity for him there. And then another opportunity for another driver in Connor Mosack, who is a full-time Trans Am and part-time ARCA Menards Series driver. He's joining Sam Hunt Racing this weekend. That's a good opportunity, huh?
Yeah, he'll be behind the wheel of that number 26 Toyota at Watkins Glen this weekend. He did make an Xfinity Series debut earlier this year at Portland, and that was with Joe Gibbs Racing. So this will be his first start at the Glen in the Xfinity Series. He did make a trip to Victory Lane at the New York Road Course in a Trans Am TA2 Series. So we'll definitely look forward to seeing Connor Mosack on the track here for Sam Hunt Racing. But Austin Wayne Self is making his Xfinity Series debut this weekend. Andy?
Yeah, he'll be driving a number 32 machine for Jordan Anderson Racing in collaboration with his AM Racing team. Quote from Austin himself says, "I am very thankful for this opportunity with Jordan Anderson Racing for Menno Autosport. Anyone that knows me knows how much I enjoy road course racing, and to have the opportunity to attempt to qualify to make my NASCAR Xfinity Series debut for my wife's brother's team is incredibly special." And, of course, he's going to be driving double duty. As we've already mentioned, he'll be in the ARCA Menards Series event on Friday night. So cool for him to get that opportunity with Jordan Anderson Racing this weekend.
Yes, indeed. There's also a bunch of Cup Series drivers that are running double duty this weekend. In fact, 4 Cup Series regulars are getting that extra track time on the road course at Watkins Glen. Cole Custer, William Byron, Kyle Larson, and Ross Chastain. Custer is making his 5th Xfinity Series start this season in that number 07 SS Greenlight Racing Ford. In his 4 previous starts this year, he posted 1 win. That was at Auto Club. He has 2 top 5s and 3 top 10s. Byron is also making his third Xfinity Series start this season in that number 17 Chevrolet with Hendrick Motorsports. He has the 1 top 5 and 1 top 10 this season. This will be his 2nd Xfinity Series start, though, at Watkins Glen. His 1st was in 2017 when he finished in 10th. But there's a couple of other drivers we can mention here, too.
There is indeed. Kyle Larson is going to be driving the number 88 Chevrolet for JR Motorsports It will be his second start of the season. His other start this season was at Road America, where he ran runner-up. And then there's that Ross Chastain guy we keep talking about every week. He'll be behind the wheel of the number 92 machine. That's for DGM Racing in his third start of the season. His two other starts were also on road courses, which was Circuit of the Americas and Indianapolis, in which he finished 17th and 4th, respectively. This will be his sixth NASCAR Xfinity Series start at Watkins Glen, where he has a best finish of 14th. I have a feeling, though, that he'll be in contention for the win this weekend. He's done a phenomenal job in that 92 car thus far this season, so he will be fun to watch on Saturday.
He definitely will be. Always one to watch, no matter what race he's in. Okay, now back in action. There's five races to go here with the Xfinity Series. They were off last weekend, so they'll be back at the track this weekend. But time is winding down. The playoffs kick off at Texas Motor Speedway on September the 24th. And so with those five races left, things are definitely going to heat up, starting at Watkins Glen International for the fifth of six road course events on the 2022 schedule. So we know that there are some drivers that have already clinched their spot. So that includes A.J. Allmendinger, Justin Allgaier, Ty Gibbs, Noah Gragson, Josh Berry, and Austin Hill. Brandon Jones, however, can clinch regardless of his finish, and that's the following drivers can clinch on previous wins with a win by a driver who has previously won. So that's Brandon Jones. He can also clinch the following if the clinch on previous wins with a win by a driver who's currently winless. So again, if that happens, then Brandon Jones needs to go out and get a win himself in these next five races. Again, a driver that can clinch on their win alone, that's Brandon Jones. And, of course, any of these other drivers can clinch with a win as well. Riley Earp, Sam Mayer, Daniel Hemric, Landon Castle, and Ryan Sieg. Those guys all need a win if they're going to get in. For Stewart Haas Racing, Riley Herbst is at 583 points. Junior Motorsports' Sam Mayer at 578. They're the highest-ranked drivers without a win, and they've been pretty much neck and neck in the point standings for several weeks now. They're both are going to be pushing to post their first Xfinity Series career win as they head to Watkins Glen this weekend. Now, Earps has given the Glen one go last year when he posted a 13th place finish. He didn't have the performance that he was hoping for on the road course in the first part of the season, but he has done quite well at Road America and Indianapolis. He posted a top 10 finishes at both of those tracks. Like Earps, Mayer has made one start at Watkins Glen where he raced his way up to a top 10 finish, 10th, and he started in the 23rd spot. So this on this season's road courses, he has posted one top five and two top 10 finishes. So we'll have to see what these guys can do this weekend. But one driver that everybody's going to be watching is A.J. Allmendinger.
Absolutely. He should be fun to watch. He always is on the road courses and will no doubt be in contention for the win.
Okay. Do you have it?
Yeah, I actually was thinking that we were done with Xfinity, but that is not the case. So let me continue with A.J. Allmendinger.
We're just sliding right into Xfinity.
I can see that there. It goes without saying that all eyes should be on A.J. Allmendinger, though. When you look at his success share in the Xfinity Series, it's been impressive on the road courses. He has 13 wins, 9 of which have been on road courses, which is 69% of his wins. So it's no surprise when fans see the NASCAR Xfinity's all-time road course wins leader post a win at Indianapolis. there's only one left to check off a win at, and that is Watkins Glen this weekend. Obviously, a really good chance to do just that, considering he's had runner-up finishes in two out of his three starts at the track. But there are two drivers who might give him a run, and that's Justin Allgaier and Noah Gragson. Allgaier has had a stellar 2022 season with three wins, 10 top fives, and 15 top tens. And on top of that, he's done well in three out of the four road courses this season. He's had an impressive history at Watkins Glen, and in his 10 starts, he's posted four top fives and seven top tens. Gragson, meanwhile, only has two starts at Watkins Glen under his belt, with top 10 finishes in both races. But what makes him the threat, Sharon, is that the success he's had on all four road course races this season thus far, in which he's posted one top five and four top tens at Portland, Road America, Circuit of the Americas, and Indianapolis, no doubt making him one to watch. I believe Jay Huseman picked him to win. Probably not a bad idea. Should be a good option for sure this weekend.
Absolutely, it will be. So they had a two-week break, the Xfinity Series, and now they're heading up to upstate New York for the Go Rewards 200 at the Glen. Since I didn't mention this before, I will now. That race will be Saturday, August the 20th at 3 p.m. It will be on the USA Network. If you have the NBC Sports app, you can also watch it there. And radio coverage will be on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. There's been 27 races at this seven-turn, 2.45-mile road course. They've had 16 different pole winners and 16 different race winners. Joey Logano has the record for the youngest pole winner. He was 25 years, 2 months, 15 days in 2015. And last season, Ty Gibbs became the youngest winner there at 18 years, 10 months, and 3 days old. Only 9 races have been won from the pole, most recently by Joey Logano in 2018. And at that point, he set the track's qualifying record on August 6, 2016, with a speed of 124.552 miles per hour. Logano also holds the record for the most poles at the track with 4, and he's tied with Terry Labonte for the most top fives at 7. Ty Gibbs is the only former winner, that's amazing, isn't it, that's entered this weekend at the Glen. If Gibbs once again snags a win at the New York road course this weekend, he'll become the 5th driver to post back-to-back victories at the track. And if he does that, he'll join Terry Labonte, who did it in 94, 95, and 96, Ron Fellows in 2000 and 2001, Marcus Ambrose did it in 2008, 9, and 10, and Joey Logano in 2015 and 16. So the Xfinity Series will kick off the weekend this Saturday, August the 20th, with practice at 10:15, followed by qualifying at 10:35, and all of that can be watched on Peacock and streamed on the NBC Sports app. So if you have that app, you'll be able to watch all of that. We've given ourselves plenty of time to get through all of the Cup Series here. We usually run out of time on that, Andy, so I'm kind of excited that we've got a full half hour to get the Cup Series in here.
Indeed.
Yes. They'll be racing the Go Bowling at the Glen at Watkins Glen Sunday, August the 21st at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Big purse, $6,664,145. It will be televised live starting at 2 p.m. with the pre-race coverage on USA and also on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll race the distance of 220.5 miles over 90 laps. Stage 1 ends on lap 20. Stage 2, also 20 laps, ends on lap 40. And the final stage is 50 laps, ending on lap 90. So a lot to cover here in the Cup Series. So we've got Reddick looking to make a tie here with another competitor.
Indeed. Last season, well, actually, first, it looks like he can tie Kyle Larson's road course record this weekend. He looked to tie it, which is very impressive. Larson's had a tremendous amount of success on the road courses. Last season, amongst Hendrick Motorsports driver Kyle Larson's monster championship season, in which he won 10 races, included a record of becoming the only driver in series history to win on three different road courses in a single season, which was Sonoma, Watkins Glen, and the Charlotte Roval. Very impressive, really. This weekend, RCR's Tyler Reddick, which is the defending winner of the last two road course races on the schedule in Road America and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course, is looking to become the second driver in series history to accomplish the feat. And if Reddick does, he will have won his road course events in consecutive order on the schedule, which makes it even more impressive. I don't know if he's the new Chase Elliott or not, but boy, has he really turned the heat up, Sharon, on the road courses this season. He's almost – he's the one to watch, in my opinion. I believe Mike Orzel may have picked him, and a pretty smart choice for sure, because he will be a factor on this one for Sunday.
Yes, indeed. Okay, there's plenty of winners this season with 15 different races through the first 24 races on the schedule. The Next Gen Car have combined for one of the best seasons of racing ever. Now, with two races left of the regular season, everyone's wondering, will we see a 16th or possibly even a 17th different winner heading into the playoffs? If so, it would be the first time since the inception of the playoffs that started in 2004 that the series has produced 16 or more winners in the first 26 races of any given year. On average, the Cup Series has produced 12.4 different winners in the first 26 races of a season since 2004. This season is tied with the 2011 season for the series' most different winners during the regular season, with 15 different winners each. The 2022 season has two chances to break that tie with the 2011 season this weekend at Watkins Glen and next weekend at Daytona. So that is the big question everybody asks, and I think they've been asking all season long, is there going to be another new different winner this week? So we'll find out on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it should be a fun one for sure. Let's talk about the road course ringers to watch at Watkins Glen. And we're not talking about the road course specialists from years past. The Cup Series drivers have gotten so good at road course racing that they have become the new road course winners on the circuit. Heading into this weekend, there will be 14 active road course winners entered to compete on Sunday's Go Bowling at the Glen. Let's take a look at the active winners in the Cup Series. You've got Chase Elliott with 7, Kyle Busch with 4, Martin Truex Jr. with 4, Kyle Larson 3, Kevin Harvick with 2, A.J. Allmendinger with 2, Tyler Reddick with 2, Joey Logano, Kurt Busch, Ryan Blaney, Christopher Bell, Denny Hamlin, Ross Chastain, and Daniel Suarez all have a win apiece. Hendrick Motorsports teammates Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott have been the cars to beat at Watkins Glen the last few seasons. Elliott won both 2018 and 2019, and then Larson won last season's event, with Elliott running in second. Elliott will look to retake his crown as the active road course king this weekend, as he does lead all active drivers on the circuit with 7 wins on the road courses. And if Elliott were to win this weekend, he would tie, believe it or not, NASCAR Hall of Famer Tony Stewart for the second most road course wins in the NASCAR Cup Series all time, with 8 each. That would be very impressive. That other guy, Jeff Gordon, leads the Cup Series in road course wins with 9. So that would be an impressive – yeah, that would be such an impressive list to be a part of if he can do it. And he will do it. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Elliott becomes the all-time road course winner at some point in time. If he can't get the win,
though,
maybe –
And he's doing it so early in his career.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. He's got so many years left, Sharon, that he could end up with 15 or 20 road course wins alone, which would be quite impressive. If he can't get the job done, though, maybe fans will get to see another new winner this weekend. I think, personally, that could happen. with the series record 5 new winners this season. Three of the first 4 road course races this year have produced 3 first-time winners, and that's Ross Chastain, Daniel Suarez, and Tyler Reddick, who outdueled Chase Elliott for his first career win at Road America. 4 Cup Series drivers all-time have posted their first series wins at Watkins Glen: Steve Park, Marcus Ambrose, A.J. Allmendinger, and Chase Elliott. So that could very well be the case this weekend. 7 drivers that visited Victory Lane in the NASCAR Cup Series last season that are still looking for their first win: A.J. Allmendinger, as we already mentioned, he'll be a threat this weekend. Eric Almirola, Brad Keselowski, Bubba Wallace, Martin Truex Jr., Michael McDowell, and Ryan Blaney. Of course, Blaney trying to lock in a win as well as Martin Truex Jr. if they're to secure their spot in the 2022 playoffs. So it should be fun to watch this weekend, no doubt.
No doubt at all. Talking about Blaney and Truex, they are in a battle for that last playoff spot following another 2022 season repeat winner at Richmond Raceway, Kevin Harvick. Team Penske's Ryan Blaney in 16th, and that's the transfer spot on points, has opened up his points cushion over Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex Jr., who sits in 17th, the first spot outside of the playoffs. From 19 to 26 points just in that one race as they head into Watkins Glen International. Now with just 2 races to go, tensions are pretty high for both of those drivers as they vie for that final postseason spot. Now, Blaney posted his 12th top 10 finish this season at Richmond. That's what helped him hold on to that 16th spot in the playoff standings. The North Carolina native is hoping to make the playoffs for his 6th consecutive season of his career. Hard to believe he's been in for 6 years already. This year, from 2017 to 2022, in 24 starts this season, he's put up 8 top fives. He has an average finish of 13.2. So look for Blaney to contend toward the front of the pack again this weekend at Watkins Glen. Not only does Blaney have a Cup Series career win on a road course, he's won at the Charlotte Roval in 2018, but he's made 5 series starts at Watkins Glen, posting 1 top 5 and 2 top 10 finishes. His average finish is a solid 11.6. So do you want to talk about the next guy sitting in his rearview mirror?
Yeah, absolutely, and that is none other than Martin Truex Jr., who's in the 17th position in the playoff standings, 26 points behind Blaney in 16th. This season, Truex has made 24 starts, posting 3 top fives and 11 top tens. His average finish is 13.0. Truex is hoping to catch Blaney in these next 2 races and secure his spot in the postseason, looking to reach his 8th consecutive playoff berth, which is actually very impressive. That's between 2015 to 2022. Truex is the only driver outside the playoff cutoff still eligible to make the postseason that has previously won at Watkins Glen. That was back in 2017. Watkins Glen is one of his better road courses, in which with 15 starts, he's collected 1 win, 7 top fives with 10 top tens, with an average finish at the 2.45-mile road course at 10.1. He finished 3rd behind Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott in this race 1 year ago. So, another really good opportunity for him to maybe get that first win of the season, Sharon, and lock in his spot so he doesn't have to stress too much about Daytona next week. I don't think anyone wants to go through that.
Exactly. I think both him and Ryan Blaney want to get that win this weekend, and I'm sure both have plenty of fans that are pulling for both of them, so we'll see what happens. Okay, now several of the drivers have already won this season and they've earned their spot in the playoffs. There's still some drivers that still need to clinch that postseason spot by earning enough points no matter where they finish in the remaining races. They will not fall out of the top 30 in points. Once a driver has achieved that points total, they have officially clinched their spot into the postseason. So we'll break it down now. The following 10 drivers have already clinched a spot in the 16-driver field: Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain, Joey Logano, Christopher Bell, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, William Byron, Denny Hamlin, and Tyler Reddick. Now, these drivers can clinch on previous wins with a win by Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Chastain, Logano, Bell, Harvick, Kyle Busch, Byron, Bowman, Hamlin, Suarez, Reddick, Cindric, Briscoe, or Kurt Busch. Alex Bowman, it looks like all of these drivers can actually clinch regardless of their finish. Bowman, Suarez, Cindric, Chase Briscoe, and Kurt Busch. That's if there's somebody who's had a previous, who has a win, gets another win. So the following drivers can clinch on a previous win with a win by Ryan Blaney or Martin Truex: Eric Almirola, Eric Jones, Darrell Wallace Jr., Bubba Wallace, or Austin Dillon. These are all the drivers that are on that bubble. So Alex Bowman, if that happens, Alex Bowman would need 4 points, Suarez 22, Austin Cindric needs 40 points, and Chase Briscoe needs 47. These drivers can clinch with previous wins on previous wins with a win by Chris Buescher. So Alex Bowman would just need the 1 point, Suarez 22, Cindric 37, Chase Briscoe with 44. Now, if there's a win by Justin Haley, Alex Bowman wouldn't matter where he finishes. He would still clinch. Daniel Suarez would need 3 points, Austin Cindric 20, Chase Briscoe 28. Now, if Ricky Stenhouse gets a win, then Bowman's going to win. Actually, four drivers can win regardless of their finish, or clinch, I should say, regardless of their finish. That's Bowman, Suarez, Cindric, and Bristol. Kurt Busch, however, would still need 41 points. If Cole Custer wins, then four drivers again would clinch, the same four drivers, Bowman, Suarez, Cindric, and Briscoe. And in this case, Kurt Busch would just need the 33 points. If there's a win by Michael McDowell, Brad Keselowski, or a win by another winless driver lower in the standings, again, the four drivers would win regardless of their would clinch regardless of their finish, Bowman, Suarez, Cindric, and Briscoe, but Kurt Busch would need 23 points. If there's a win by Harrison Burton or another driver lower in the standings, Kurt Busch would need the 16 points. Those other four drivers, Bowman, Suarez, Cindric, and Briscoe, would clinch regardless of their finish. Same is true with Todd Gilliland if he wins, or a driver lower in the standings that is winless. Kurt Busch would be added to the list of drivers that could clinch regardless of the finish. Now, these drivers can clinch on a win alone. That's Ryan Blaney, Martin Truex, Alex Bowman, Daniel Suarez, Austin Cindric, Chase Briscoe, or Kurt Busch. And then these following drivers can only clinch with a win. Eric Almirola would clinch with 44 points, Eric Jones with 56, Bubba Wallace can only do it with a win, and Austin Dillon can only clinch with a win. So that's pretty much the different clinch scenarios for the Cup Series. So we've mentioned Chase Elliott a few times here tonight. We're going to mention that guy one more time here.
And it is for a pretty big reason, too, and that's because he can win the regular season championship this Sunday at Watkins Glen. He can clinch the regular season championship by scoring just 4 points, believe it or not. I think he'll be okay as far as that's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But Austinville, Georgia native has grown his points cushion over second place Ryan Blaney to 116 points going into this weekend's event in upstate New York. So once Elliott gains 4 points and crosses the 120-point threshold, Blaney can't catch him in just two races. Though mathematically possible to not achieve this clinch this weekend, Elliott's likelihood of becoming the fifth different regular season champion on Sunday is quite good. If he accomplishes this feat, he will join Martin Truex Jr. In 2017, Kyle Busch 2018, 2019, Kevin Harvick 2020, and Kyle Larson in 2021. So certainly a feat that I suspect he will accomplish this weekend, and certainly will be nice to get that wrapped up.
Okay. We've got some drivers that are going to be giving their first appearance. But some previous drivers who have made their first appearance at Watkins Glen include Buck Baker in 57, Billy Wade in 64, and Tim Richmond in 1986. But we've got an F1 driver coming over to make his first appearance at Watkins Glen in a NASCAR stock car.
Yeah, this is really exciting, actually. This whole program in itself, which is called Project 91. It's a third trackhouse racing car that is intended to bring drivers with international racing experience and from other racing disciplines the opportunity to go Cup Series racing. This is the first race for this team in which 2007 Formula One world champion Kimi Raikkonen will become the first driver to join Project 91 this weekend for the NASCAR Cup Series Go Bowling at the Glen. The goal is to expand the organization's international reach by fielding a Cup Series entry for renowned international racing drivers. Trackhouse Racing, a division of Trackhouse Entertainment Group, also fields the 99 for Daniel Suarez and the number one for Ross Chastain. In a quote from team owner Justin Marks, Kimi Raikkonen is the driver I first had in mind when we created Project 91. Kimi is a world-renowned driver with a tremendous amount of talent and fan following. Veteran crew chief Darian Grubb, who has won 23 NASCAR Cup Series races, will lead the effort this weekend. In a quote from Raikkonen, he said, "I wasn't looking to race again, but Justin came to my home in Switzerland and convinced me how serious he was about putting together a top-notch program. This will be fun, but it's something I will take very seriously. I know how competitive the NASCAR Cup Series is, and it will be a big challenge." Of course, Raikkonen retired from Formula One in 2021 after competing with the sober McLaren, Ferrari, Lotus, and Alfa Romeo teams since he started in 2001. A native of Espoo, Finland, has won 21 races and stood on 103 podiums in his career, certainly a very impressive career. This will not be Raikkonen's first venture into NASCAR. He competed in the NASCAR Xfinity Series and the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series races at Charlotte in May 2011. He could very well be put on a great show this weekend, as I hope he does, as three NASCAR Cup Series drivers have won at Watkins Glen in their first appearance at the track, and those drivers were Buck Baker, Billy Wade, and Tim Richmond. Those back in 1957, 1964, and 1986, respectively. So going to be a fun one this weekend. I've been looking forward to this to see how he does, and hopeful that he does well.
Well, there's definitely going to be an international flair because there's a series record 7 countries represented at the Glen this weekend. This weekend's interlist definitely has that international flair. Again, 7 different countries amongst the competitors in the Go Bowling at the Glen on Sunday. Let's start with Daniel Suarez from Mexico. But there's also sports car aces like Mike Rockenfeller from Germany, Kyle Tilley from England, NASCAR Euro Series champ Loris Hesemans from the Netherlands, and a pair of F1 drivers. We mentioned Kimi Raikkonen of Finland and his talented Russian driver, the Daniil Kvyat. I hope I pronounced that right. Before this weekend's race at Watkins Glen, the previous Cup Series record for the most countries in a single race was 6 different countries, and it happened twice. In both of those cases, most of the competitors represented the United States, but the 5 other countries also representative in, as well. In the first instance was at Sonoma Raceway in 2010 with John Magnussen from Denmark, Juan Pablo Montoya from Colombia, Marcus Ambrose from Australia, Matthias Ekstra from Sweden, and Max Pappas from Italy. The second time it happened was at Watkins Glen back in 2013. And at that time, they had Juan Pablo Montoya, again from Colombia, Marcus Ambrose, Owen Kelly, both from Australia, Max Pappas from Italy, Victor Gonzalez Jr. from Puerto Rico, and Ron Fellows from Canada. So we're going to see some international driving this weekend on the road course at Watkins Glen.
We are, and that's what's going to be a lot of fun. I really do look forward to that. So let's see, taking a look here. Going road course racing at Watkins Glen this weekend. Tensions are high, and the anticipation is running rampant against competitors as the NASCAR Cup Series prepares for its penultimate race of the 2022 regular season, which, of course, is the Gold Bowling at the Glen this Sunday, as we've already mentioned. It is the fifth of six road course races on the 2022 schedule, joining Circuit of the Americas, Sonoma Raceway, Road America, Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course. And after this weekend, of course, just one left. That'll be the Roval as part of the 2022 playoffs. It'll be the 39th running of a Cup Series event on this historic 2.45-mile road course located near Watkins Glen, New York, known as Watkins Glen International. Racing in the Watkins Glen area began on the streets of the city, but after several events were held, a permanent facility was opened in 1956. The first Cup Series event at Watkins Glen was on August 4th, 1957, won by Buck Baker, with an average speed of 83.064 miles an hour, driving a 57 Chevrolet. And over the years, the Cup Series has changed the length of the race three times. The first Cup Series event was 101.2 miles. The second race was 161.7 miles. And the third race was 151.8 miles. Every race since then has been scheduled for 220.5 miles, which equates to 90 laps. The previous 38 Cup Series races at Watkins Glen have produced 22 different pole winners and 24 different race winners. Hall of Famers Dale Earnhardt, Mark Martin, Jeff Gordon lead the NASCAR Cup Series in poles with three poles each. And Joe Gibbs Racing's Kyle Busch leads all active drivers in poles with two. That was back in 2011 and 2017. Five of the 22 Cup Series pole winners at Watkins Glen are active this weekend, that being Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin, A.J. Allmendinger, and Kurt Busch. NASCAR Hall of Famer Tony Stewart leads Cup Series victories at Watkins Glen with five. That goes back to 02, 04, 05, 07, and 09. One win shy of tying the series record for most road course wins at a single track at six, which is held by Hall of Famer Bobby Allison. That was at the Riverside Raceway. Hendrick Motorsports driver Chase Elliott and Joe Gibbs Racing's Kyle Busch lead all active Cup Series drivers and wins at Watkins Glen with two victories each. Elliott's Hendrick Motorsports teammate and 21 Series champ Kyle Larson is the most recent winner at the track. Of course, that was last season. And eight of the 24 Cup Series winners at Watkins Glen are active this weekend, those being Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, A.J. Allmendinger, and Kevin Harvick. All the Cup Series on-track activity begins with practice. Of course, that is going to be on Saturday, practice and qualifying. Should be good. A lot of active road course winners in the field, Sharon. So I suspect they'll all be in contention for strong finishes in the win on Sunday.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an exciting race. I love the road course racing, and I think Watkins Glen is going to be just as fun as all the other road courses to watch this weekend. But they've got that added pressure of the two drivers that are trying, well, it's more than two drivers that would love to get a win this weekend to be in the postseason playoffs. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping for Martin Truex Jr. to get that win and get in. But I'm hoping it's also a turning point for the way he's been running this season. For whatever reason, it seems like they've been up there contending, but they tend to fade at the end of the race.
Well, maybe this weekend can turn it around, and certainly if you're that team, you'd rather try to get the victory this weekend instead of relying upon Daytona. We all know what can happen there. So hopefully for his sake and his team's sake, they can get the job done on Sunday. I know that'd make you pretty happy, I'm sure, and hopefully they can get it done.
Yes, indeed. I hope they do. I should have you back every week, Andy, because I'll tell you what, we got through all of that information in record time.
Yeah, no, that was good. Certainly enjoyed that. You know, I try to improve upon my craft a little bit every time I get to do these full shows. And, you know, it's a lot of information to get through because there's so much racing going on this weekend. But it's fun to talk about it because, as I mentioned at the top of the show, road course racing, especially Watkins Glen, is amongst my personal favorite race weekends each year. So it's fun to be on and certainly fun to talk about it. You know, really, really looking forward to this weekend.
Yes, I believe the only two series that are not racing this weekend is the Truck Series and the ARCA East Series. I didn't get a chance to tell everybody the next time that the ARCA East will be racing. Their next race, let me go ahead and tell you that now, is the Sprecher 150. That will take place on August the 28th at 2 p.m. Central Time, that's 3 p.m. Eastern, out at the Milwaukee Mile. It will be available for live streaming at MAV-TV. That includes Flow Racing, and fans will be able to watch it there. Radio coverage, of course, will be at arcaracing.com. So that's going to be another good one to watch.
Yeah, certainly looking forward to that. I would agree. That should be a good one. You know, definitely looking forward to getting the E-Series back in action. But if you're a race fan and you're looking for ARCA racing events, plenty of that this weekend. I think the Watkins Glen race actually is live tomorrow night on Fox Sports 1. I intend to watch that one. That should be a good one. And, of course, the Evergreen event should be a fun one, too. So really looking forward to those races and, the ARCA series on the road course is always entertaining, so I would expect nothing less for tomorrow night.
It is going to be fun. What I like is you get all of these different racers that are coming into the series and can be spoilers, but these ARCA racing drivers are kind of keeping up with them and giving them a challenge as well. So I think it's going to be fun to see how it all plays out. Ryan Unsicker is one to really watch at that Illinois State Fairgrounds. As we mentioned earlier, he has won there before, and he'll be one of the favorites to win this weekend for sure. Okay. We are coming up on our Hot Topic Sound Off. I was just checking to see if we've heard from Tommy. I don't think we've heard from Tommy yet. But it sounds like it's going to be the Three Amigos tonight, Andy, with yourself, myself, and Mike Orzel joining us for Hot Topics tonight.
Yeah, looking forward to it. You know, certainly some stuff that's developed since our show on Monday. So Hot Topics is always entertaining, and I would expect nothing less. Certainly plenty of things that we'll be taking a look at here in the next hour, so it should be fun.
It definitely will be. I'm going to go ahead and bring Mike into the queue. Let me see. It's going to take just a second or two here. Mike, you're on. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good evening, everybody.
Okay. I was telling Andy it's going to be the three of us here tonight. I haven't heard from Tommy, so it doesn't sound like he's going to be able to make it. But why don't we have you kind of help kick us off with our first hot topic here tonight?
Well, this is kind of a follow-up from what we talked about on Monday, but they made it official today. Kurt Busch will be sitting out for not just this weekend at Watkins Glen, but they also confirmed today he's going to be skipping Daytona next weekend. So expect to see Kurt Busch back no sooner than the first playoff race for the Southern 500 at Darlington.
Okay. Andy, your thoughts about Kurt Busch skipping these two races?
I think it makes total sense, really, especially having a playoff waiver There's really no sense in risking further injury at a place like Watkins Glen or Daytona. We all know the kinds of crashes that can be produced at these races. I think it's a very smart move from Kurt, you know, personal perspective in trying to remain healthy, and also the team's perspective in trying to keep their driver healthy. I'm sure Kurt wants to go race for a championship, and the best way to do that is to avoid these next two races. I hate to say it. Obviously, as a Kurt Busch fan, you want to see your driver out there on the track, but from a health standpoint, it makes total sense, and it gives Ty Gibbs two more opportunities to get some valuable Cup Series experience. So a very, very smart move by all parties involved, and I think that that move could pay dividends for Kurt going into the 10-race playoff.
Yeah, I would agree, and we did touch on this a little bit on Monday night, but Kurt Busch does have that waiver. So right now it sounds like he's planning on coming back for the first race of the playoff. In that first round, I think he's going to need a win if he wants to get into the next round. So why not be as fresh as you can be to come into the playoffs, especially given the circumstances? So it just gives his body that extra time to recover and become healthier, and gives him a good running start, if you will. At a time when he really needs that in that first round of the playoffs if he wants to advance on. So, yeah, I think it makes all the sense in the world. And, Mike, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
So I may be reading between the lines where maybe there isn't something between those lines, but there's some interesting verbiage in the announcement today. Previous announcements, Curtis specifically said that he was not cleared to participate in the race that was coming up, that, you know, was part of that announcement that he was sitting out. And those words, not cleared, didn't appear in today's announcement. I don't know if that's just a coincidence or, like I said, if I'm reading into something that's really not there. But it's possible that Kurt has been medically cleared, but is now making the decision to sit out these next two races, kind of for the reasons that we talked about, where Watkins Glen and Daytona are both high-risk, low-reward kind of races for him, where there's a significant risk of aggravating his injury. And, yes, he could potentially win at Watkins Glen or Daytona. I don't want to take that away from him. But the likelihood of him winning those races is fairly low given the risk that's involved there. That kind of risk versus reward equation just wasn't there. So hopefully this does mean that Kurt has been medically cleared, and the decision to sit out this week and next week are more along the lines of making sure that he remains medically cleared and not risking that clearance status for two races that have very little upside for him to participate in and a lot of potential downside. I'm not sure exactly whether that's true or not. It's just speculation on my part, but something interesting I did notice with that today.
Okay, Andy, your thoughts?
No particular follow-up on this one. You know, it will be the speculation is rampant for sure, and I think we'll probably get to this regarding Kyle in a little bit, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But certainly the fact that Ty's getting all this experience, I think, you know, might be alluding to something for down the road. I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. He's been doing a fantastic job, Ty Gibbs, in that number 45 Chevrolet. And is it a Chevrolet or a Toyota? I guess it's a Chevrolet, right?
It's a Toyota.
Oh, it is a Toyota. Okay, you're right, it's a Toyota.
I suspect Joe Gibbs wouldn't be too pleased if it was a Chevrolet. No, it's a Toyota, yeah, over at 2311.
Okay, so Trackhouse is Toyota. Okay. I don't know why I was thinking it was Chevrolet. But I guess it's actually 2311. So that is... that is good experience for Ty Gibbs, and I think that it's good that he's going to get that extra seat time. I did see one person bring up how many races can he race this year and not affect his rookie status if he were to come up into the Cup Series, say, next year. And the response from Bob Pockrass was that it's really on a case-by-case basis, dependent on what the circumstances are. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I thought it was an interesting question to be brought up. I think Ty Gibbs has shown a lot of maturity in the few races he's run so far this season in that number 45. And I do think that he's certainly deserving of continuing on in that seat. As far as the announcement, it's really ambiguous. It doesn't really say one way or the other, but you're right, Mike. In previous statements, I guess they've said that the doctor hasn't cleared him yet. This one doesn't say those words specifically, but he does say that the time is not right to return to the car just yet. And as we've already outlined, it does seem to make a lot of sense for him to sit out and continue that recovery. So we'll see what happens. But you get the final word, Mike.
Well, I think, like you said, the 45 is in very good hands. It's beneficial for all parties involved. Kurt Busch gets the benefit because he gets the additional weeks of rest. Ty Gibbs gets the benefit because it's a relatively low threat. No one really expects Ty Gibbs to go out there and win Cup Series races, and it's not even his rookie season. He's just literally thrown into the car. So Ty Gibbs gets the benefit of experience in about as low of a pressure situation as the Cup Series can get. I don't know that I would ever say the Cup Series is low pressure, but in this circumstance, it's probably about as low of pressure as you could expect for a pre-rookie kind of a driver. So great opportunity for Ty Gibbs, and the 45 car still gets to get out on the track, represent their sponsors. And Ty Gibbs has been doing a very good job, very respectable for his level of experience. He's held his own out there, hasn't really been contending for wins, but he does have one top 10 and has been in the top 20, at least running in the top 20 for all these races. He had a mechanical failure this past weekend, but he's been running about where the 45 car runs most weeks. And it's really hard to expect anything better out of him. Now, with regard to Kurt Busch in the playoffs, he's not in as terrible of a position as you would think. Yes, he's in a very precarious position right now, where if we have two new winners this weekend at Watkins Glen and then again at Daytona, Kurt Busch would be the lowest scored driver in regular season points with one win. So two additional winners would eliminate Kurt Busch from the playoffs with his one win. But if Kurt Busch is not eliminated from the playoffs, if we have a repeat winner either this weekend or next weekend, then Kurt Busch is in the playoffs, and he gets to benefit from the playoff points he earned earlier this season. He has seven of them. He got five for his win at Kansas, as well as 2 points for two stage wins earlier this year. So Kurt Busch would start the playoffs with 7 playoff points. I believe last I saw that puts him 12th or 13th overall in the playoff standings. Not a great position to be in, but nowhere near as terrible as he's sitting right now in the regular season standings. So this medical issue that Kurt has had with the concussion that he got at Pocono, not ideal, certainly not ideal, but it's also not season ending as well. Kurt Busch definitely has a legitimate chance to continue advancing through the playoffs and could theoretically at least win the championship this year. And what a story that would be.
Absolutely. Andy, you get to pick our next hot topic.
Yeah, and, you know, this is something we alluded to earlier in the show, but these were comments coming from Greg Zipadelli from Stuart Haas Racing regarding the future of their Cup Series program, in which he said, at this particular time, the plan would be for Cole Custer to return to the 41 car, and they are trying to iron out their future plans for the 10 car. Curious, what you think about that?
Okay. Is that on the teams board, Andy?
I'm not sure. I could take a look, but certainly, you know, something
if
that
it,
I thought.
If it's not, that's okay. I just want to add it if it's not. Okay, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Sure. Greg Zipidelli, if you're not aware, is the I believe he's the director of competition at Stuart Haas Racing, so certainly somebody who'd be in the position to know. And I did see what Andy's referring to regarding Zippy's comments about the 41 mm-hmm. car as well as the 10. Interesting to hear, because there have been a lot of rumors that Cole Custer was going to be out of that 41 car and then potentially Kyle Busch into the 41 car. Apparently, that 41 is all but secure for next year. Don't forget that Cole Custer has family connections. His dad is he's some vice president position at Stuart Haas Racing. Don't quote me on that, but Cole Custer's dad does have a fairly decent executive position at Stuart Haas Racing, and I'm sure that plays into the decision for Cole Custer to stay in that car. He's had a rough go of it. He did have that one win at Kentucky last year, 2 years ago, and other than that, the 41 car has had an abysmal year this year. He's had two fires back-to-back where the car is literally caught on fire on the racetrack, not necessarily Cole's fault, but just kind of serves to highlight some of the bad luck that Cole has had. And even when the car holds together, the 41 really has not been a contender this year. So seeing Cole Custer come back for another year, maybe they can right the ship and get that car back to being competitive, because right now the 41 is a weak link at Stuart Haas, which Kevin Harvick notwithstanding, Stuart Haas has been a team full of weak links for the past couple of years. So hopefully Cole Custer can get his feet under him and bring that 41 car back into contention with Stuart Haas.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think it's good that Cole Custer is going to be back. I do think that the organization as a whole has not had as good of results as we're used to seeing from Stuart Haas Racing. But the fact that Kevin Harvick has won these last two races certainly give fans of Stuart Haas Racing that hope that the other cars will benefit from the momentum that's being built by Kevin Harvick right now. So hopefully we'll see that happen, and it wouldn't be just the 41 of Cole Custer, but you've got Chase Briscoe there. And the big thing, and the thing that Greg Zipidelli alluded to, is that their focus is really on the 10 and who's going to drive the 10 for next season. There's been some speculation that maybe Eric Almirola will be back, but it sounds like they're working on trying to find a driver for that seat. So that, I think, is going to be the big news coming out of Stuart Haas Racing. But I do hope that they figured something out that's going to turn the ship there, and kind of that will trickle down to all of the drivers within that organization. Andy, your thoughts?
Interesting in my mind, you know, that they would bring Cole back. You know, there had been some rumors about possibly Kyle Busch taking over the 41 car, and you know, certainly if you have the opportunity to bring in a driver like that to your organization, you'll do what it takes to make that happen. It seems as if that's cooled off a bit. Maybe the 10 car has become the focal point for that to happen. I'm not sure. You keep hearing about Eric Almirola maybe retiring, maybe not retiring. Seems as if that's still yet to be determined. Nothing against Custer, but it's been a struggle. This is his third season now, and you know, if you look at his stats, he's regressed really since his rookie season, in which he made the playoffs and won a race. But, you know, his last season was a struggle, and this season has been worse yet. So not really sure what the deal is. You know, obviously a driver that can win races. He was very good in the Xfinity Series, won a lot of races over there and ran very well. And he's won an Xfinity race just this season alone. So, you know, he knows how to drive a race car, but for whatever reason, the Cup Series has been a struggle, quite frankly. You know, and certainly that's been amplified this season, perhaps more than the previous two seasons. And so, you know, I guess if they're willing to give him another chance, that's a good thing. You know, maybe things will change. I don't know. You know, you certainly hope that they do. But also curious to see what happens with the 10 car. As I've already mentioned, it seems like there's a lot of uncertainty about who's going to be in that car, and I'm sure it's all sponsorship driven and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see, but it seems as if there's you know, a lot of uncertainty as far as what that team's going to do in the future. But, you know, certainly there is work to be done if they are to, you know, get all four of their cars being competitive again. I will disagree with Mike a little bit, and I am going to be biased in saying Briscoe hasn't been terrible this year. He did win the race at Phoenix, and that wasn't a win that was handed to him. He won that race flat out. And they've had their ups and downs, but they've had some decent runs in there. So I'm not going to say that the whole organization's been garbage. They've certainly had their flashes in the pan. But certainly the whole team has to get better, and they have to get more consistent if they expect to go anywhere in the playoffs. Otherwise, it'll be a very quick one. So I do agree that work has to be done. But certainly with Kevin winning, they seem to be headed, hopefully, on the right track for doing what they need to do to try to make somewhat of a playoff run. Otherwise, it's not going to get very far. So I guess to close it out, you know, I am curious what this team does do in the future. As far as the 10 and 41 cars are concerned, you know, I would hope that they would try to bolster their roster to try to make the team more competitive, because it has been a struggle. There's no doubt about that. Last season was abysmal, and this season's been very inconsistent. And, you know, certainly I think there is room for improvement if they expect to win races on a consistent basis.
Yep, I totally agree with you. I think that there's not a whole lot for me to add. I do agree that I'm talking about Cole Custer. Cole Custer certainly needs room for improvement. And I forget who said it now, but he has digressed, because his rookie season, he was the only rookie that made it into the playoffs, and that was with a win. So we know he's capable of winning. That was, of course, in the old car, not this new car, which has a big learning curve, and even some of the veteran drivers are struggling with learning this new next-gen car. So I can't put all of that on Cole Custer necessarily, but again, if he can glean, you know, from the other teams that are in his organization and learn from them what can be done better in the Cup Series with the new next-gen car, that's going to be a positive for him. But I would say this, that if he struggles again next year in that car while everybody else is doing well, let's say Kevin Harvick takes his momentum from this season in the next season, then you've got to start asking if it is the driver. And I'm a fan of Cole Custer. But at some point, you've got to get the results. And I think he's capable of it. I've seen him racing up in the top 10 and around the top 10 this season, in spite of the fact that it's a new car. But we've got to start seeing some wins from Cole Custer. I think he's capable of it, and we just need to start seeing it. So, and the idea of Kurt Busch coming into the number 10 at Stewart Haas Racing, I think is an interesting idea, because I think he could add a lot to that organization and help them get that ship righted. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot still of T's to be crossed and the I's to be dotted before we know how that's going to play out. But certainly interesting. So, Andy, you get the final word here.
I don't really have follow-up to this, but, Mike, do you have any follow-up by chance?
Well, I'm not going to really address the 10 yet, because we've got another hot topic here to discuss momentarily, which I'm sure the 10 car is going to feature into prominently. But with regard to the 41 car, you've all really hit the nail on the head with it. There's got to be some sort of an improvement with the 41. They've really got nowhere to go but up at this point. I really hope they've hit rock bottom, because too much worse and they're going to be in Rick Ware Racing kind of territory, which is not what you would expect from an organization like Stewart Haas. So hopefully getting some stability with knowing that Cole Custer's coming back for another year, maybe maybe that stability will help improve that team and they can start getting some of the results that they enjoyed about 2 years ago.
Okay. Again, I don't have any more to say. So Mike, we'll move on to the next hot topic.
Well, here we go. Time for the weekly edition of the Kyle Busch as the KFB turns soap opera on the Door Bumper Clear podcast. It sounded like Corey LaJoy said emphatically and with authority that Kyle Busch will not be back in the 18 next year. Obviously, nothing official has been announced from Joe Gibbs, Kyle Busch, or anyone in a position of authority. But I would say that Corey LaJoy is just the latest of quite a few people who I wouldn't say that they're in the position to know, but they certainly are in a better position to know more things than we are. And Corey LaJoy is another one who is saying in no uncertain terms that Kyle Busch is out of the 18 and kind of pointed towards the Stuart Haas 10 as well as two mystery Chevy teams as the two potential additional landing spots for Kyle Busch. So I'm interested to hear what rumor mills have you guys been listening to?
Andy.
Yeah, this is interesting. It seems as if it's changing by the week, certainly. For a while, we had heard that it might be the 41 car, but that rumor was a bit dispelled a couple days ago by Greg Zipadelli. You know, I've heard that it's steering away from SHR, and the colleague team seems to be at the head of it. I'm not sure who the other Chevy team is, but I mean, if you're a team trying to bolster your program, why not go for Kyle Busch? I mean, he is by and far a long ways ahead of any other free agent as far as the value that he'd bring to your team. And I would say that whoever can land him, it's a huge home run. And if you're Joe Gibbs Racing and Toyota, you've performed an epic failure. If you have failed to keep a guy like that in your car, you have 1,000% done something wrong. And I know that's another topic for debate here in a bit, but, you know, I applaud any team that's making a push to go after him because that would be a huge win for any organization that's in the business of trying to win races and championships.
Yeah, I agree with you, Andy, and actually this started with a comment posted on Adam Stern's Twitter account with a quote from Daniel Suarez. He said, in my opinion, Joe Gibbs Racing hasn't done a good job of selling Kyle Busch. They've known that M&M's is leaving for a long time, and they haven't been able to find anything. I find that surprising, and that's via actually Nate Ryan. And a conversation that he had with Kyle with Daniel Suarez, I agree with that. You know, and Andy, you mentioned it as well. If you haven't been able to hang on to a driver the caliber of Kyle Busch, something's definitely wrong. There should be sponsorship out there for Kyle Busch, and he's brought a lot of sponsors into this sport. So to not be able to find a sponsor for Kyle Busch is a pretty sad state of affairs. so moving forward, I guess the rumors I've heard too is that, and you're saying that Corey LaJoy kind of confirmed it, that Kyle won't be back in the number 18 for this season or for next season. So the options are, I guess, the Stuart Haas Racing number 10 or a TBD colleague car, as Mike puts it. Either one of those organizations would be huge. But you know that Kyle Busch is looking at this as not just from his perspective as a driver. He's also looking at this at the perspective of a team owner and his own organization, Kyle Busch Motorsports. And he has said that is a part of any discussion that he's having with any of these teams. So it's interesting that Stuart Haas Racing, of course, is a Ford organization. The Colleague Racing is a Chevy organization. So it sounds like he's at the point of jumping ship with Toyota and going to the other side. I don't want to say the dark side, but from Toyota's perspective, I'm sure they're looking at it like that. A few years ago, I think it was Jack Roush that said that about somebody leaving his organization and going to the dark side. We'll have to see how it plays out. We know that he's talking to other organizations. We know that Kyle Busch Motorsports is a big part of that. So if he's switching to a Ford or a Chevrolet, you got to think that these guys are really hoping to bring Kyle Busch into their fold from a manufacturing perspective. I think I mentioned this before, that Ford lost some of their executives to Chevrolet, and that was me reading between the lines as to maybe it's taking time for their executives to kind of climb, go through their learning curve within the organization, and to keep Toyota in the top running form that we've known them to be in the past. So, again, if Kyle Busch goes to either Chevrolet or Ford, it's going to be a huge, huge story because he's bringing Kyle Busch Motorsports with him. So, Mike, your thoughts?
Well, you guys kind of nailed it, where if Toyota, not just Joe Gibbs Racing, but if Toyota lets a guy like Kyle Busch get away, that's huge. Toyota basically is the house that Kyle Busch built in terms of NASCAR Cup Series racing. He was one of their first. Yes, I understand they had Michael Waltrip Racing, and Michael Waltrip Racing had some decent years. But realistically, when people think of Toyota drivers in the NASCAR Cup Series, probably the first household name that comes to mind is Kyle Busch. And if Toyota is letting Kyle Busch slip away, they're not just losing the driver of the 18 car, but they're also losing effectively their development program. Kyle Busch Motorsports is the development program for Toyota from the Truck Series. Then they race in the Joe Gibbs Racing Xfinity Series cars before ending up in the NASCAR Cup Series. So if Toyota's losing Kyle Busch, that means they're most likely giving up their Truck Series development program as well. Now, I understand they have Thor Sport, which runs Toyota's in the Truck Series, but Thor Sport isn't really a development program type of an organization. They have Ben Rhodes, and maybe Ben Rhodes eventually works his way up into the Cup Series. Same thing with Ty Majeski, but they're not really the development program pipeline that you think of when you think of Kyle Busch Motorsports. So if Toyota's willing to let not just Kyle Busch the driver go, but to Kyle Busch the team owner and the associated development pipeline that goes with him, it's a huge consideration on their part. Obviously, the numbers just didn't work out in order to make that happen, but you would figure that if they were serious about keeping him, even without a third-party sponsor, Toyota would have put a factory sponsorship onto Kyle Busch to keep him in the 18 car, and it just sounds like that's not happening. I'm not sure if there were some toes that were stepped on, some feelings that were hurt. I'm sure there has been. It is business, but to a certain extent, there is, I'm sure, some toes to be stepped on and some feelings to be hurt there. But it's just, I know I was very, very cool about Kyle Busch leaving Toyota and Joe Gibbs Racing. I said emphatically, even less than a month ago, that he wasn't going anywhere. Got to break in?
Yeah, I need to break in. I'm sorry, Mike. We're at that time of the night that I do an announcement for, especially our first-time listeners. If you haven't listened before, we go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, and that it's probably going to be mid-sentence. To let you know, we are going to continue to record the rest of our conversation, and that's available on our podcast, and I'll come out on Twitter to let you know that the podcast is available. I also do a posting on Facebook, just so that fans know that at that point, all they have to do is fast forward to the player at fanforracing.com, just fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of that conversation. So we didn't want to catch anybody off guard and not know how they can hear the rest of us, the rest of the show, and that's the info you need. But, Mike, go ahead and finish up your thought. My apologies for the interruption.
Oh, not a problem. I wasn't even looking at the clock, and I should have been. But anyway, so talking about the departure of Kyle Busch Motorsports, Kyle Busch has said in several interviews, including as recent as last week, that the 50 or so employees that he has at Kyle Busch Motorsports is a huge consideration for him. He's responsible not just for the race car he's driving, but he's responsible for the livelihood of all those employees at Kyle Busch Motorsports. So protecting that company, those people and their jobs is a big consideration for him. And the other interesting thing that he said is kind of his long-term career sunset plan is in about 8 years or so when Brexton Busch, Kyle's son, is eligible to race in the truck series. Kyle Busch's last year or two in NASCAR, he says he wants to share a truck with Brexton for a year or two and then hand the keys to the truck over when Brexton's old enough to race full time. So that tells me that Kyle Busch, maybe even more important to him than his NASCAR Cup Series future, is the future of Kyle Busch Motorsports. So whatever deal that comes out, whether it be with Chevy, with Ford, or Toyota, is able to put something together, it sounds almost like it's more important to Kyle Busch that his Truck Series team is taken care of for the long-term future, even more so than him as a driver himself.
Yes, indeed. Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, whatever Kyle does in the future, you know, his Truck Series program, I think, is a big factor in what happens. And obviously, should he change manufacturers, that's a pretty big loss for Toyota and a really big gain for some other manufacturer. So be curious to see what happens. But, you know, obviously a lot of moving parts involved here. I wanted to touch base on the Daniel Suarez comments. Kind of interesting for him to make those claims. You know, I'm sure that, you know, Joe Gibbs Racing has been doing all that they can, but, you know, I think for quite some time now, one of the bigger things at play here is Busch's salary, which is probably the highest in the series or amongst the highest in the series, which makes himself a bit of a tough sell for prospective sponsors. It's no secret that, you know, sponsors, you know, probably aren't paying what they used to in light of the smaller driver salaries, which has been a trend in recent times. So, you know, I'm not sure that it's totally fair for someone to say that Joe Gibbs didn't do enough. You know, but at the same time, I will admit that, you know, if they cannot keep him, you know, they have failed miserably. You know, so I don't know what needs to change or what needs to take place, but you would think that if they really truly wanted him in that car, they would put him back in that car. And that goes for Joe Gibbs Racing and Toyota Racing Development. And there doesn't seem to be a big incentive for whatever reason to re-sign him, and I'm not sure why that is. I'd be curious to see what they have to say when his deal is ultimately announced, because it seems to me that, at least in my opinion, that they are willing to let him walk in favor of Ty Gibbs. Not sure that's a terrible idea, given how successful Gibbs has been so far, but, you know, willing to let somebody like that go in their last 2 years of their career is, in my opinion, it's a bit mind-boggling. So I'd be very curious to see what's said once this is all said and done.
Yeah, me too. I'd love to be a fly on the wall to kind of hear what's going on behind the scenes. But unfortunately, sometimes in these cases, we never do find out what was behind all of that. But it does lead you to kind of think that maybe there was stepping on some toes, and it could be either direction. It could be them stepping on his toes or him stepping on their toes that has kind of lessened their motivation to want to try to keep Kyle Busch. I would think Kyle Busch would bring a lot of different sponsorship to the table. There's still Interstate Batteries, which is, of course, Joe Gibbs Racing. That's their sponsor, so it would be interesting if they jump ship, but to stay with Kyle Busch. But it does kind of make you think that maybe there's something going on there, because it's so obvious that it's such a big loss for that organization. Why in the world would they do anything to let him go? And yet that's what we see happening right before our eyes. Now, it might materialize totally. We might be totally in the left field here, and maybe Toyota will come up with something at the end to kind of keep him in their fold. But I just don't see it to go in that direction with all the chatter that I'm seeing at the moment. And we'll have to see how it continues to play out. Mike, you get the last word.
Well, we talk about Ty Gibbs, and it's kind of the assumption that if Kyle Busch is not in the 18, the Cup Series 18 next year, that's kind of assumed that Ty Gibbs is going to end up in that car. And I'm sure Ty getting the experience subbing for Kurt Busch in the 45 Toyota, I'm sure that's played into this decision as well, and maybe seeing as well as Ty Gibbs has been doing in the 45 substituting for Kurt Busch, maybe that's made it a little bit easier to let Kyle Busch go. But, and it's a big but, I don't think that Ty Gibbs is a suitable replacement for Kyle Busch. Not now. Kyle Busch is a NASCAR Cup Series two-time champion. Still, I don't know if I want to say he's at the prime of his driving, but he's not too far removed from it. Kyle Busch is a weekly threat to win most races. Do I think Ty Gibbs is going to get there? Yes, Ty Gibbs will be in the future a NASCAR Cup Series superstar, probably a champion in our sport at some point in his career. However, I don't think that Ty Gibbs is a suitable replacement for Kyle Busch. If you can keep Kyle Busch, even if you've got Ty Gibbs in the back pocket, you've got to try and keep Kyle Busch. So letting Ty Gibbs just slide right in and try and pretend that he's some kind of a replacement for Kyle Busch is just not there. We've seen time and time and time again over the past 10 years where experienced veterans, Matt Kenseth, Clint Boyer, Jeff Gordon, obviously he retired of his own volition, but all these hot superstar drivers coming up from the Xfinity Series, every single one of them went into these cars that were vacated by veteran drivers, and almost all of them did much, much worse than the veteran driver that they replaced. I don't expect Ty Gibbs to do any differently. Ty Gibbs will eventually be a very good NASCAR Cup Series race car driver, but losing Kyle Busch to replace him with Ty Gibbs, I think, is not the right move. We're going to see what happens. Like I said before, this isn't the last we're talking about it, but my opinion that Kyle Busch is going to be coming back to the 18, it's definitely weakened. I was convinced a month ago, I was 100% convinced that everyone talking about Kyle Busch leaving the 18, they're crazy. Well, they don't sound so crazy anymore, so I don't know.
Okay, we'll let that be the last word on that subject. Andy, you get to bring up our next topic.
Ryan Blaney signs a multi-year contract extension with Team Penske.
All right, Mike.
Well, we went from some uncertainty to some serious certainty. Now, this isn't really a surprise. I don't think that anyone really expected Ryan Blaney to be going anywhere. He's done very well with Team Penske. He hasn't won this year, but I think he's first or second for total laps led on the season. He hasn't broken through into the win column yet, but he's running second in the Cup Series points behind Chase Elliott, and there's a pretty decent margin now between Ryan Blaney and the number three points position driver. It's crazy because we keep talking about Ryan Blaney potentially being eliminated from the playoffs if he doesn't get a win, but he has done everything but win this year. He's run extremely well. You feel like he's knocking on the door to win a race any given weekend. He could potentially win this weekend. He's also been very strong at the plate track, so a win at Daytona is not out of the realm of possibility for him. And not a surprise at all to see him coming back for a long-term contract to Team Penske. The only surprise is that the Blaney deal was announced before the Logano deal.
Yeah, that is interesting. I am happy for Ryan Blaney. I am glad that he's going to bring some continuity to the Team Penske organization. Joey Logano, yeah, that is interesting. I think it's a smart move. You've said that as I know Jay said that he thought it was a smart move. And even though he's a winless driver, he's one of the top drivers in contending every week. So I think Team Penske is doing the prudent thing. It is interesting that they haven't announced anything on Logano. I'm going to look on Jayski's here to see when Logano's contract is up. Is he up this year?
Yeah, Logano is in a contract year this year.
Okay. So that is interesting. But I would think that that's forthcoming as well. So, Andy, what are your thoughts?
It's a smart move, I think, for Team Penske to get him locked up long-term. Obviously, a solid driver that typically wins a few races and makes the playoffs each year. A young enough driver who has a solid future with the team and a solid future in the sport. So pretty smart for them to get that done. I did not know Joey Logano was in a contract year, so I find it interesting that they would work on the Blaney deal first, but I don't see Joey – well, actually, I thought Logano was signed for a multi-year deal.
It's not a contract year for Joey Logano, just to clarify. Shell Pennzoil has extended their sponsorship through 2027. Logano is signed through 2023 with the primary sponsor with Shell Pennzoil.
So yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that
you know,
that makes
so actually,
sense.
You know, Penske, I think, has positioned itself for a stable future when you consider, you know, long-term deals with Logano and now Blaney, and obviously Cindric being a rookie, I'm sure has a solid future ahead of him as well at the organization. So pretty smart to get Blaney locked up long-term, obviously. You know, he's brought success to that organization the last several years and on the cusp of hopefully making yet another playoff run here in 2022. So definitely a good move on that team to get him before somebody else tried to come in and possibly steal him away.
Yes, indeed. Mike, your follow-up?
Well, yeah, we were just talking about the instability and the uncertainty at Stuart Haas Racing and Toyota with Joe Gibbs Racing. It's great to see a team on the other end of that coin. Team Penske and Hendrick Motorsports are kind of the opposite end of that spectrum, where both of those teams have a very solid stable of drivers that are most likely going to be there for the very long-term future. And every single one of those drivers, the three at Team Penske and the four at Hendrick Motorsports, are all very strong drivers with a lot of upside, many, many years worth of success left ahead of them. So I think that was a great move by Team Penske. And removing that uncertainty and that distraction, I think, is a great move on their part. And they've really got themselves set up with three great drivers, Austin Cindric, Ryan Blaney, and Joey Logano. All three of those could be potential champions for that organization.
Yes, indeed. Not to mention, it takes a lot of pressure off of him going into the playoffs when he's in probably one of the highest pressure spots right now. We're trying to stay on top of that cut line and hopefully nobody below that cut line winning before he does. So I think that that's a very smart move on Team Penske's part to go ahead and sign him. The one that they haven't announced yet is actually Austin Cindric. His contract does end in 22, but indications, his dad is Tim Cindric, who is an executive at Team Penske. So I fully expect that Austin Cindric will be re-signed. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Yeah, that's a very stable organization, to Mike's point. And I just think it's smart for them to announce that Ryan Blaney's been extended before those playoffs begin, and especially at this particular point in the season with his current situation. Andy?
Yeah, I think that, you know, those three drivers that they have presently, you know, or the long-term future of that team. So I'd be surprised if they made any significant changes in the years to come.
Okay. Let's see. I guess we've got time for maybe one more topic, Mike.
All right. That's good, because that's all I've got left is one more topic. Bob Pockrass tweeted out some snippets from a bulletin that NASCAR put out earlier this week regarding not so much changes to the rule book, but some clarifications. And it has to do with the wrap on the cars. Basically, NASCAR has stated extremely clearly that you can only have wrap on top of factory body panels. You can't have anything underneath it, nothing that can change the shape of the body panel. So the wrap has to be properly adhered. You can't have a bubble underneath it or something like that. And the thing that really caught my attention is how specific and clear they were about that. think back to the Pocono disqualification where we had two Joe Gibbs Racing cars, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, disqualified at Pocono because of some tape that was found under the wrap. And I can't help but feel like this is a response to that, and maybe this was a clarification for some stuff that NASCAR has been finding and not necessarily publicizing.
Yeah, I kind of get that feeling as well. But, Andy, you get first shot at this before me. Andy.
Well, I think this is just in follow-up to the disqualifications from a couple of weeks ago. You know, obviously NASCAR saw something that they didn't like, and any time that these teams push the limit, they have to put out rules, it seems like. So I would say that this rule change is strictly in response to not only that DQ, but maybe they've seen some other things, too, you know, over the past few months that have made them want to clarify that a bit. So not surprising. You know, these teams are innovative and will continue to push the limits. And, you know, eventually NASCAR has to make modifications to the rule book to curtail that accordingly. So not a big surprise. I think this, like I said, just stems from what we saw a couple weeks ago. And I guess hopefully things are a bit clearer for these teams moving forward.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that they put it in writing. I think this is one of those loopholes that maybe some teams have found, that as they take cars back randomly to the R&D center, they're finding these types of things going on. And I think it's good that they're putting it as clearly as they can put it into the rule book that that's not allowed. So if I recall correctly, in addition to the fact that there were cars disqualified a couple of weeks ago, I think the number 11 car was one of those cars that was picked to randomly be looked at after that race. And you never know. And maybe it wasn't on the 11 car. Maybe it was another car. But you never know what they find in those random searches that they bring back to the R&D center, that they've obviously felt a need to put this in writing and to clarify it so that there is no question mark in anybody's mind about what is and is not allowed. So I get a feeling there was one of these, we'll let it go this time, but don't let it happen again kind of things, and in the meantime, they put it down in writing. So, Mike, your thoughts?
Oh, come on now. Are you honestly going to say there's no question mark in anyone's mind about something? We're talking about people who are, they're simultaneously the smartest people you're ever going to encounter, but also somehow have the worst reading comprehension of any people you're ever going to encounter. They can simultaneously read every single word that is written in a rule book and at the same time read none of those words. It depends how it suits them. So just because NASCAR has put this in writing doesn't necessarily mean that everything is clear. It just means that that one very specific instance is somewhat less murky, and that's about the extent of it. Like I said, I don't know, but obviously we know about the disqualifications from Pocono. NASCAR hasn't said that they've found anything else, or at least they haven't announced any penalties with regard to things that they've found regarding wrap or body contour. Because what it really comes down to is using the wrap to change the contour of the car, which could potentially provide some sort of an aerodynamic advantage, depending about how the wrap doesn't stick properly to the car and it creates a pocket or something like that. NASCAR's trying very hard to clarify the rules and make sure that that's not the game, and that the wrap and the paint on top of the wrap remains decorative only, because that's what they're not allowed to paint these Gen 7 car parts anymore. They have to be wrapped directly on top of the Gen 7 parts, and then you can paint on top of the wrap if you want. So mandating that they have to wrap the car, it then opens the door to, well, it's basically an adhesive film, so you can do certain things with adhesive film to change shapes and cover gaps and whatnot. And NASCAR is trying to be extremely clear that they don't want to see those kind of games being played. And chances are, if they're coming out and saying don't play these games, it's because people have been playing those games. So we'll see where it goes from here. I'm sure that now that the line is in the sand, if somebody decides they want to stick their toe across the line, it's going to get slapped pretty hard, like we've seen Brad Keselowski and Michael McDowell's teams both be slapped very hard by the rule book. And we also saw two disqualifications. So if somebody wants to play those games and touch the hot stove, they're going to find out how hot it is. And I think going forward, we're going to see that again.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point as far as, you know, the penalties are concerned. You know, I think especially now when you consider that there's been a rule book change that tries to explicitly state what they can and can't do with regards to this matter. Obviously, if somebody were to try this or make any kind of changes moving forward, the penalties would be stiff. I think that they've made a couple examples this year of teams you know, that have broken the rules. And, you know, the two-point penalties, obviously, with McDowell and Keselowski. And then you consider the DQs of Hamlin and Bush at Pocono a couple weeks ago. They've made a point that they're not messing around. And I think as they make some of these rules clearer, there'll be less tolerance on their end if teams continue to push the envelope.
Yes, indeed. In fact, it, just to kind of go over the exact wording here, the external surfaces of body panels may be wrapped or wrapped with paint applied to the wrap. Any external wrap or coating must be removable. So textured paint or vinyl will not be permitted. The wrap must conform to the underlying surface. The wrap must not create new features and must not diminish existing features. The perimeter, the second part of this, is the perimeter of the window must remain flush with the body surface for the entire event. Crossed out and revised, they've got silicone will not be permitted to seal the quarter panels. That's been revised to say sealing or adhering the quarter windows to the body will not be permitted. So any kind of sealant, not just silicone, is not going to be permitted. So I think NASCAR has just tightened up the loophole is all that amounts to. But the fact that they put it in writing and specifically said what can and cannot be done, I think is the important factor here. And it obviously tells us, you know, all rules are made because somebody has found that loophole. Somebody has pushed that limit, and it's created a rule. So that's how rules come into existence, is because somebody's pushed it beyond where it's supposed to be. And so now we have a rule to really clarify. So, again, you're right. These guys are smart people, but I've always said if you're smart enough to do it, parameters, you're also smart enough to do it inside the parameters. So we'll see where it goes. Mike?
Yeah, I think kind of like we've seen before, you kind of go enforcement cycles ebb and flow a little bit, right? So we saw kind of a sharper enforcement cycle over the course of the summer. Maybe it's going to let off a little bit, but the playoffs are coming. And I think the past 2 years we've seen massive penalties to at least one playoff team within the first race or two of the playoffs as something is found, whether it be, you know, for example, Ryan Blaney with the ballast that was left in the car a couple of years ago, or it could be a body modification, something along those lines, kind of a shot across the bow in that first round of the playoffs. It kind of almost seems like that's become the standard over the past few years. So whether or not that this is setting up for that shot across the bow to come within the first couple races of the playoffs, time will tell. But history has said that we might be in for somebody getting whacked by the rule book pretty good here within the first three races of these coming playoffs.
Yep, that's what they're setting up, it seems. Okay, we're coming up toward the top of the hour. I think we've completed all of our hot topics for tonight. So let's go ahead and do the roundtable. Mike, we'll start with you.
Sure, it's Mike underscore Ozell on Twitter, Mike double underscore O on Reddit. Good to be back talking to y'all on a fairly regular basis. I should hopefully be available next week. Really looking forward to the racing this weekend at Watkins Glen. It's one of my favorite racetracks. The racing is always outstanding there, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it this weekend. Hopefully Andy will be around. We can chat throughout the race, and that's always, it just makes it that much more enjoyable.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Really excited for this weekend. Watkins Glen, also one of my personal favorites. That's why I'm grateful to have done the whole show tonight. Certainly a lot of fun to talk about it, and I will be around all weekend, so really looking forward to that, Mike, and should have a lot to talk about. Looking forward to it.
Well, let me say a big thank you to Andy for standing in tonight as co-host. I do appreciate it. You did a great job, and I really I'm hoping that we can call on you again to co-host if it comes down to that. I too am looking forward to the Watkins Glen races. There's a lot of racing going on this weekend. There's also the Arca Menards Series is with their doubleheader at Watkins Glen and Illinois State Fairgrounds. There's also the ARCA West race that's out at Evergreen Speedway this weekend. So there is a bundle of racing going on. Even though the Truck Series is off this week and for a couple weeks, we have a lot of racing ahead of us. Looking forward to that. We had Greg Zipidelli on earlier. Give a full interview. We're not able to run the full interview, but that is available over at JSKIs if you want to read it there. A big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate you for taking the time to hear what we have to say, whether it's on the live broadcast or the podcast. We'll look forward to doing this again on the other side. We review all of the racing that took place this weekend. So thanks to everybody, and enjoy your weekend of racing. I think we're ready to call that a wrap, guys.
All right, have a great night.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.